This is the Freedom Fiends, secreting seditious sounds from the flaccid fiend bone of liberty. We give you a crypto chiropractic crack to strengthen your spine against the roving wiretaps of tyranny. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hello, welcome to the Freedom Fiends.
All right.
I'm here with James, and I am Diana, for a lovely evening, talking about the news and the meows. So what do we got? We've got some stuff going on in New York.
Oh, there's stuff going on everywhere. But, you know, first, I just want to, you know, point out that this is the first time that the Freedom Fiends master computer has randomly assigned us together as fiend hosts. So it is a pleasure to be with you here in the fiend zone, communicating over fiend phone with you. So,
yeah, awesome. Likewise. I was trying to figure out if we'd been on air together before. And no, this is the first, so we'll make it fun.
Yes.
So up for the night, I was browsing through the news and came across New York having a bit of a debate over whether or not people should be allowed to pee in public without being thrown in jail. The pee-pee police may be losing their jobs.
Oh, like,
how did this even happen?
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess you, like, I kind of knew that you're not, like, you know, you're not supposed to do it, but the reality is it's just a bodily function that you don't really have much of an option sometimes, right?
Well, and it, you know, it is a problem in an urban environment. It's not like you can just, you know, go find a tree somewhere, you know, and it doesn't bother anybody. And when there's no public bathrooms available, yeah, they can. I'm sure that can create some situations. So,
no, I'd never actually looked into the laws on peeing, but you know, I just kind of figured you'd get a fine, right? But no, in New York, you could actually be thrown in jail if you're caught urinating in public.
Well, remember, every law, no matter how trivial, comes with an implied death sentence. Okay, so. You know, if you break the law, especially with the NYPD around, there is always a chance that they will kill you.
I know they got a bad rep. I'm sure.
But luckily, their aim is really bad. So you're probably in more danger from the NYPD if somebody like across the street is publicly urinating and they open fire, than if they're actually aiming at you. But
I'm more concerned with the aim of the people who are peeing, actually. No, I guess the people with the guns, you got to be a little more worried about them. But there's a bunch of stuff sort of wrapped up in this public debate going on, too. Mainly the broken windows theory of crime. Right? I hadn't heard
of
that
before. Which, not to be confused with the broken window fallacy, but why don't you tell us, what is this broken window theory of crime?
Yeah, well, I was just finding out about it tonight because I hadn't heard about it. But this is the idea that, and you know, was it Rudy Giuliani who is, you know, mayor of New York at the time? He had this mandate to clean up New York. He wanted to, you know, reduce crime and make a really big difference. So he followed this theory, broken window theory, where if you arrest people for petty crimes and small things, that those are the people who will eventually commit the bigger crimes. And so you'll reduce the big crime by tackling it at the starter level, right? And hopefully,
well, I think that what he pioneered was this theory that if you just take half of the population and put them in jail, you cut your crime rate in half. Okay, and it seemed to work. Well, I'm not sure if that's the right strategy, but right. I mean, if you put everybody in jail, then it's going to have an impact of some kind.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems when you like test out these social theories. If it does appear to work, you don't necessarily know why. Like, it could be working for a different reason, which I actually think, like, the guy that does Freakonomics, I think his name's Stephen Levitt, he does some amazing work trying to figure out why certain things in society happened by, like, looking at statistics and stuff. And he actually did study crime. I mean, it's kind of controversial what his conclusion was, Have you heard that, the Freakonomics assessment of crime?
No, I haven't. Tell me more.
Well, it's a fairly old book. I think he's done two Freakonomics, but in the original one, he looked into the intriguing thing about crime was that at a time when all the criminology experts were guessing that crime was going to skyrocket and get, you know, exponentially worse, it actually ended up being reduced, and they couldn't figure out why. So they all started, you know, changing their theories and their assessments and so on, but they didn't really have an explanation for why their predictions, you know, were so grossly inaccurate. So Stephen Levitt looked into it, and his conclusion was that if you backdate, you know, the age of the people who would have been committing the crimes, the major difference in society was that abortion was made legal.
What? That's interesting.
I know. And now, controversial. Like, he was
right.
Just, like, lambasted for, what are you saying? And he's like, well, I'm not saying anything. Like, I'm not making a moral judgment or prescribing anything for society. It's just, that was the best explanation he found. But, we started talking about that because this is one of the things. If you see a result in society, how can you determine accurately what it was that made the difference? It could be something totally, seemingly disconnected, right?
Right.
Whether
it could be
right or not.
Right. It could be, you know, advances in technology created additional prosperity that, just happened to be around the same time and with the same demographic of person, right? Like, suddenly, new opportunities became available for people to advance their education or to learn skills or to start their own businesses, or I don't know. You know, it just seems like a bit of a stretch. But how did he explain how this legalized abortion act could have an effect on crime? Is it just because there's less desperate poor people out there? I mean,
yeah, well, the children that were unwanted weren't being brought into the world, and unwanted children tend to have negative life experiences, which lead them into crime, was his theory, right?
Hmm.
So that was just one of the theories, but the reality is that I don't know what reality is, I guess, but people are so keen to be the one to find the answer, right? To be the one to invent a theory that's popular, that's, you know, implemented as the new fix for all civilized society, that I don't think they really, you know, investigate all the, you know, underlying issues, right?
Right.
It's a problem in academia in general, I think. That they want to be, like, they want to go down in the history books as, you know, the inventor of the perfect social system or the one who solved the crime problem. And the people that they're they're really just experimenting on the public, right?
Right. And I think it's human nature to try to, you know, try to put a puzzle together, even if you don't have all the pieces, and come up with something that sounds reasonable. But sometimes people take those, you know, too seriously, and it's nutrition. You know, it's like, well, you're eating a bunch of fats. That's going to make you fat. Well, it sounds completely believable, right? And, you know, for years, they're like, you got to cut down on fatty foods, fatty foods, fatty foods. Eat more grains. Eat more grains, they said.
I know. And everything causes cancer, right? Milk causes cancer at one point.
So, you know, now it's like, nope, you got to cut out the grains and get those healthy fats in your diet. You know, okay. You know, it's like, so people, you know, these theories come out, they sound reasonable, but they're sometimes woefully incomplete and off target. So,
well, I can see the logic in the thinking there, but the practical side of it is that what you're talking about is making, like, small crimes extremely difficult to overcome. So that's one of the criticisms, is that if somebody gets arrested for a petty crime, then they become a part of the criminal justice system. They become somebody with a record over something silly, and then that will affect, you know, their lifestyle and their identity, right?
So, I think Giuliani I think he's using the North Korea model. Like, you know, where he's just like, look, we're just going to crack down. We're going to bust heads. We're going to hurt everybody. We're going to, you know, just have this horrible, tyrannical regime occupying the streets. And it just takes the fun out of everything.
Well, and the people who back these ideas, too, are generally doing it because they see themselves as a law-abiding citizen. This law that's going to affect people's freedom won't affect me because, you know, I'll never get arrested for anything. I don't do those things.
Right.
But the problem with laws is it really is a slippery slope. So,
well, and it's very dangerous. I mean, you know, Giuliani's tactics included the stop and frisk, which has been imitated in Philly and God knows how many other places. But literally, there were like several million incidents a year where cops just look at somebody and say, "You up against the wall," and they pat them down. Okay. I mean, just an egregious violation of their human rights, totally destructive of the person's dignity, creates this occupation mentality, where they're like soldiers in an occupied territory, and they can just harass anybody at any time, shake random people down. It's a horrible way to live. Like, I mean,
yeah,
even
the stop
if it,
and frisk is been criticized mostly for being really racist in application as well.
Well, and it is. And, you know, of course, it wouldn't be make it better if it was, you know, if their victims of stop and frisk were, racially similar to the population. That doesn't even matter. Everybody's getting abused. But of course, they go to, just like a lion looks for the weakest prey, police look for people that they can prey on that maybe can't afford lawyers. Maybe they don't necessarily, haven't had the best education. They might not know their rights. There's a good chance they're on probation already, which means they're the chance of sending them back to jail is extremely high. So they're looking for easy prey, and it ends up being minority neighborhoods. So whether it's racist by design or racist by outcome, it really doesn't matter. It is racist, and it's just a horrible practice, and it's I just can't imagine people accepting that.
There's what I call confirmation bias, too, with people like, you know, the police, where they go out there to be heroes and to stop crime. And so they're just confirming their bias that there's lots of criminals out there. And I think they feel good. Like, I've done my duty. I'm a hero because I've arrested somebody. Maybe a small arrest, you know, but I think that's part of what's going on.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends, we're back. I'm James Babb, and I'm with Diana Davison. I'm broadcasting from Southwest Harbor, Maine. Diana is in Vancouver, and we are communicating via the invention of Fiend Phone. So, Welcome back, Diana.
Yeah, well, we were talking about the broken windows theory of criminology, and article talking about the debate in New York about whether or not they should start reassessing their policies. I thought it was really interesting in the article. I'm looking at the one on CBC, and they say George Kelling, the criminologist who coined the concept in 1982 article with the late sociologist James Wilson, stressed that arrests should be made as a last resort. And then he goes on a bit later, as we first conceived it, broken windows has always been highly discretionary. And it seems like he doesn't really think that his own theory has been applied properly. Like, he's kind of a critic of his own theory.
Well, it's certainly been, I think, used to justify just horrific mass abuse of human rights. So I doubt that's what he had in mind when he came out with the theory.
His criticism of the application of his theory that says Kelling stopped short of recommending that New York decriminalize low-level offenses. So Yeah, it's got to be weird. Like when you come up with a theory that you have high hopes for and you think, you know, this is my name's going to go down in the books, right? And then you're alive to see it misapplied. You know, how many things have been, you know, theories have been come up with? Actually, well, I know this is really off topic, but I find Richard Dawkins' invention of memetics and the idea of the memes, holy smokes, did that ever get taken in a wacky direction? And like, and Daniel Dennett actually did who's an amazing philosopher, he did a TED Talk where he was talking at the very beginning about how you have a responsibility as the inventor of an idea or a concept to oversee the application of it, right? Like, so for Dawkins, one of the worst applications was this thing called spiral dynamics, which is almost like a cult thing where they created a hierarchy of colors that if you're angry, you're in the red thinking pattern. If you're spiritual, you're in the purple, right? And then it's supposed to be a spiral, but it's really like a ladder. And the person at the very top is the one who's teaching memetics or spiral dynamics. And he's something like turquoise or something like that. And he can travel through all the colors to reach you and try to bring you up to his level. And you can't disprove the theory because if you catch them acting angry or something, like, no, I was just going down to your level. You can't prove them wrong. Yeah. It's crazy.
Sounds like a waste of time.
Look at the criticisms of spiral dynamics. But yeah, there's this, you know, Dennett was saying, well, Dawkins kind of has a responsibility to speak out. Like, he wasn't, you know, telling Dawkins what to do. He's got a lot of respect for him. But I thought that was actually kind of an important thing to keep in mind. But at the same time, it's kind of impossible to do. Like, it's almost like rock bands or, you know, metal bands being blamed for somebody who listened to their music and then went out and killed somebody, right?
Now, that was Richard Dawkins or Richard Dawson?
No, Dawkins, the atheist.
Okay, just to make sure he's not the Family Feud guy, I think we should, okay.
Was that the Family Feud guy's name? That's funny. I should have known that because I used to watch that.
Survey says.
No, you've aged me. I loved that show. I had the home edition of that game.
What a great show! But in fact, there's at Porkfest. There has been a Liberty version of the show hosted by the legendary economist and karaoke star Bob Murphy. So that was pretty funny.
Oh, that sounds awesome! That
but
was
anyway,
at Porkfest.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was
now
a good,
I have to
good
go.
Time. Oh, you have to go. Definitely. It's a good time. But anyway.
Criminology theories, like, the stakes are really high there, you know, watching your theory applied. And, I'm glad the guy's, you know, speaking up a bit, I guess, like, from the sounds of this article, saying, yeah, maybe we got to rethink this, you know? because a lot of people would just be so, you know, happy to get their name on a theory that's on Wikipedia that they just sit back and try to, you know, continue the 5 minutes of fame for a lot longer, right?
So, you know, so if they do reverse this, maybe they'll start legalizing certain things, so they'll legalize public urination. How's that going to work?
Well, I don't think they're going to, well, it's kind of like in Vancouver, they didn't exactly decriminalize marijuana, but they announced they were not going to arrest anymore. And so people thought that meant, oh, it's legal. And they were out smoking it on downtown sidewalks, and the police were just kind of trying to be tolerant for the first few days, but it's still illegal. They just don't want to fill up the jails.
Unlike here.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Trigger warning. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends. And we're back.
All right.
So you mentioned something earlier when I brought up the broken windows theory, the broken windows economic theory. What's that?
Well, it's just really something totally different, but there's something that most libertarians will recognize, or anyone that's studied economics, is the broken window fallacy, which is, basically it's a common belief today that economic stimulus can occur when something bad happens. Like, then say, well, if somebody breaks a window, well, that glazier has a job fixing the window, and he gets paid, and then he takes that money and he goes and buys shoes, and then the shoemaker gets paid, and then that guy pays somebody else. And anyway, there's this all this economic activity that is seen after the window is broken. Okay, so there was a Frederick Bastiat wrote an essay around 1850 where he basically just completely destroyed this, and he pointed out, it's like, look, if you want to be an economist, you have to look at both the seen and the unseen. So sure, you see the glazier getting paid, but what you don't see is, well, that shop owner that had the broken window, you saw him buy the new window, but what did he not buy? What would he have bought? Well, maybe he would have
spent on other things.
Maybe he would have expanded his business and hired new employees. Maybe he would have increased his inventory. Maybe he would have, bought something else. Right. So there's the seen and the unseen, and as I think our fellow fiend Lou Sanderfien has pointed out, it's like if broken windows stimulated the economy, then Detroit would be rich. So obviously that's not the case. But so anyway, in 1850, Bastiat destroyed this concept of the broken window as being something that's good for the economy. But yet we still see it over and over again. People think, well, it's a war, but it's going to be good for the economy. Paul Krugman. Yeah, it's horrible. Paul Krugman does this all the time. Now, here's a guy that won the Nobel Prize in Economics. He's in the New York Times all the time. He's considered, highly respectable, okay? He actually said that this was a couple days after the 9/11 terror attack. He says, ghastly as it may seem to say this, the 9/11 terror attack, like the original day of infamy, which brought an end to the Great Depression, could even do some economic good. Okay. Wow. So in one quote, he's saying that that a world war did good, and the 9/11 attacks are going to have an economic benefit. Okay.
Well, you got a question, are there motives behind that? The guy with the broken window, fallacy idea, was he in the business of making windows? It's a really good possibility.
Right.
A lot of statistics, too, are being generated by people in the business of making money off the statistic results.
Right. Yeah. Well, true. But, I've pondered this, too, about Paul Krugman. Like, obviously, he's been in economics long enough to have heard of Bastiat and to read this essay. He's had, 165 years to come across it. But he actually says, here's another stupid thing he said. An alien invasion could fix the economy. Okay? An alien invasion, actually suggesting
to get some aliens.
Well, no, he thinks that it should be fabricated just to make people think there's an alien invasion and spend a bunch of money getting scared of aliens. Okay? Like, basically,
there are people doing that already.
But just to destroy resources, okay? He's thinking that, well, destroying wealth is creating prosperity. How could you be a Nobel Prize winner and such an idiot at the same time? I have no idea.
I gotta wonder, like, with all of these theories and, you know, frameworks that people want to put onto society, do we need any of them? I think, like,
no.
I actually think people organize themselves socially despite these systems, and I think they're perfectly fine without them. I don't think we need to have a comprehensive theory on life, the universe, and everything in order to create productive societies at all.
I agree completely.
It's all vanity as far as I'm concerned. And it, you know, like I said before, they just want to be the one with their name on a theory that revolutionized the world.
Yeah. Right, like with that broken window theory of crime, you know, where somebody's trying to figure out the central plan that's going to have this big impact. Okay, the central planners always get it wrong. They always do, right? But maybe if the plan was to leave people alone and respect individuals, respect the sovereignty of the individual and respect individual rights and say, look, you know, that's you, that's your property. You know, how about if we just say, look, guys, you know, let's just respect
some renegade
people's
plumbing. When you said central planning, that reminded me of the movie Brazil. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. Is it Terry Gilliam? It's so funny. Robert De Niro plays this renegade plumber in this modern, like, you know, futuristic dystopian world. And nobody, like, everything is run by central planning. And if your plumbing goes wrong, as it does in this, you have to, like, call them and wait and wait. And then they have all these forms to fill out. In the meanwhile, while he's waiting for central planning, you know, De Niro's character just kind of sneaks in and he swings around the city on a rope or something. I don't know how he gets so funny. And he goes in and he fixes the plumbing because he loves doing it and he loves fixing things. And he used to work for central planning and now he's like one of the most wanted people in the city.
So right. Does he face like criminal consequences or is he hunted by the police for this?
Yeah.
For this unlicensed
plumbing?
Yeah,
that's one of the things that happens at the beginning. There's a typo on a form and William Buttle gets arrested instead of William Tuttle, which is De Niro's character. Yeah, they're actively trying to get him and they want to kill him because he's fixing people's plumbing without permission.
Makes sense, right? That totally makes sense. Like, so, well,
but I think people can fix their own plumbing. I don't think we need central planning.
Well, I mean, let's look at the urination problem in a city, okay? You know, somebody could turn that, I mean, really that's a market opportunity for somebody to either develop a, you know, coin-operated bathrooms or more likely to just have, you know, stores and shops that you know can bring in a customer like, hey, yeah, go ahead, use our bathroom, but you know maybe you'll stop and have a drink on the way, or you'll browse our inventory as you go to the back of the store and you see what we have. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of incentives for businesses to try to solve that problem.
People can make a business out of anything.
Right. As long as there's a demand, somebody will find a way to meet that demand if they're allowed to do it. Right. So, you know, if they're allowed
to. What drives me nuts is like, I think people should work for themselves whenever possible. Right. And but you can't because you have to have, like, you know, permits and insurance. And it's not like it's just the government doing this. And people are so litigious that you need insurance to run any kind of business nowadays because somebody's going to sue you for easy money, you know?
Right. It might be like, look, I can't, a business owner might be saying, gosh, I'd love to open up my bathroom to the public. I run a bookstore. But as soon as my bathroom's open to the public, I now have to get this inspector in here. Yeah, and now the city inspector's going to come in, and I need the central planning plumber, and I need, I'm supposed to have one for each sex now. Okay, I have to double that. Oh, okay, yeah. Now I have to put up a special sign that says employees must wash hands. Okay, got that.
Yeah, and if somebody uses your portable bathroom, if you wanted to set up a, you know, a urination business or something like that, right? So if somebody uses it and they get a urinary tract infection and then they somehow manage to blame you for it, all of a sudden, you know, you don't just lose your business, you owe somebody like $100,000.
Right, or they just slip and fall, or, you know, your bathroom in your bookstore is like under a stairwell somewhere, and oh, they hit their head, and, you know,
I mean, this may seem kind of foolish, but I think it's really important to think about how the public is contributing to their own enslavement by their behaviors like this.
You know, in what way?
Well, by suing people because they can. And then every time somebody sues somebody with a frivolous complaint or, you know, a manufactured one, I've actually known people with, you know, that have tried to make a living out of just suing people for things, right? And
it's bad karma.
And every time they succeed, that makes it harder for people to, you know, have their own businesses and prosper because of all the insurance. Insurance, for some reason, I know what the reason is. It drives me nuts. It's a business that's built on nothing but fear. And unfortunately, the fear is, like, legitimate that you could be sued by somebody for no good reason who just basically decides it's going to be their easy payday.
Right. And it just, well, and, I'm going to blame the lawyers. Let's blame lawyers. They're an easy target, right? They love to litigate that kind of junk. So,
they encourage it, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, I've noticed this trend in craft beer industry, which is something I consider myself to be a beer enthusiast. So I sometimes see news stories, but for some reason now, like when a brewery gets to be a certain size, they start getting a legal department. And they start telling them to do stuff like, oh, you got to defend your brand. You're going to have to sue this other brewery because they have a name that of a beer that has this, a similar word in it to one of your beers or something like that. So you see this all the time, and it, like breweries suing each other over the names of their beer. It got so bad, Lagunitas Brewery sued Sierra Nevada because of the font they used on the word IPA, okay? They're like, hey, we think that's going to confuse people, and we're going to do some, you know, let's get the legal team in here, okay? Just because of the way IPA looked, and the fonts weren't even that similar, but they're like, well, it's three letters, and anyway, Lagunitas got what they deserved in social media. Just ridiculed, abused, harassed.
Curious.
Finally, they're like,
okay. Well, people will know the difference between you and a knockoff. So you just do your job well and don't worry.
Worms.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Would any more paranormal states? Aliens and the world of dating. Well, we were gone. But before the break, we were talking about the world of acknowledged justice that we're all forced to live in. Now let's move on to the underground world of justice, the vigilante crowd. It's been on the rise with the social justice community and social media. The Twitter hashtag campaigns. Crying out for justice where they feel justice has not been done. More and more. I actually have that as a news alert now, vigilante. because I think it's really important to keep track of.
Well, let's face it, people are completely dissatisfied with the government provided, you know, quote unquote, justice system or security system of police and courts are just horrible. They're just horrible. They're so busy trying to generate revenue and put pot smokers in jail that actual criminals, you know, can go free. So I think people are very frustrated. They don't really see the system that's been imposed upon us as working. So, right? So they're resorting to things like shaming. Yeah, the public shaming.
Well, look at Bill Cosby, right? That would be, you know, to most of the public, they see that as a success story because you've got a guy who's admitted guilt, it seems. Like, I mean, he's still just alleged of crimes, but they have a statement where he admitted to drugging women. There's over 30 women who all have, you know, corresponding stories of things that happened. And he probably, like, you know, an article I was reading today, he probably won't actually go to face a judge to be convicted if, you know, at worst, probably a plea bargain or something. But in the court of public opinion, he's done.
Right. And I'm no longer going to parties with him. Okay, so
you're not going to supply him with any escorts?
No, I'm not. I'm keeping an eye on my drink when I'm with him. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I always find it so bizarre that people with so much success would participate in behaviors so criminal that will destroy them if they ever come out. And you know, I kind of think it does come out, you know?
I just don't understand how he harmed so many people over so many years in secret and was still, you know, making TV shows and stuff. I don't get that at all.
He just gave them Jell-O pudding. You know, it fixes all ailments. For some reason, when I think of Cosby, that's the main thing that comes to mind. Not the Cosby Show or his live stand-up stuff. It's just the Jell-O pudding ads.
Yeah.
And those were always kind of creepy, too.
In hindsight, yeah. In hindsight.
Putting a spoon in their mouths or his mouth or something. I can't remember. I just remember it being really creepy. But that's not his fault. That's the people who designed the commercial, I suppose.
But you know what? Maybe there's sort of a reason that they selected that guy to play that creepy role, you know, selling Jell-O. We need some guy that looks like some kind of weird deviant. Okay. How about Bill Cosby? Yeah!
He just had the weirdest smile. Like, you know, his cheekbones would rise and would pull the corners of his mouth up, but not the rest of his face wasn't smiling or something. I don't know. I always kind of thought that was bizarre looking. But anyways, so that's seen as a success story where the public opinion court accomplished justice, where justice, they assume, probably won't be performed. And there's lots of things that are, I think, problematic with that style. But I kind of, like, you know, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I think this started with Anonymous, the online activist group Anonymous.
Okay.
Where they set a target for something that they felt needed to be dealt with. And I think they started from 4chan, actually, which has got quite the reputation. 4chan, well, let's finish the Anonymous discussion. So they've got this, like, intriguing thing going on, and they accomplished results, and they got involved in feminist cases of justice against, you know, rape, you know, for rape victims. And it just grew. That's where I think it started.
Let's get into that when we come back from the break.
Yep.
This is Squiskar Squigelps from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends from the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, and now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite, LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So that means anybody can use this. Anybody can take the Freedom Fiends material and use it for their own purposes, except the government, except Nancy Pelosi, except the Queen of England, or the King of the Netherlands, or Barack Obama, or us nice people can use it. So anyway, welcome back. This is hour two with the Freedom Fiends, and I'm here with Diana Davison, and I'm James Babb. We were talking about vigilante justice, Diana, and you had brought some interesting examples to my attention that I thought we could illuminate. Why don't you mention this thing about Cecil the Lion? I thought that was kind of interesting, what has happened to this poor dentist.
I know, it's crazy, actually, and this is also kind of seen as an internet success, but I think that, I kind of hope that people will think differently than the Cosby case about what's gone on here. We got a guy, and probably most people have heard of this, a dentist who paid for a hunting trip. He's a hunting fanatic, and not everybody's into killing animals and so on, but he was trying to do it legally, hired a guide, and the guide, I guess, broke some rules, and he ended up killing a lion that was being tracked that even had a name, which was Cecil. And so it hit the news, and PETA, the animal rights group, which is probably a terrorist group, I can't understand why they're not labeled that yet, they decided they were going to do something about this guy. He's a dentist in the United States. He now has to he's had to close his business because of the hashtag campaigns against him and so on. He's had most of his properties vandalized, and he's had to now hire security, armed security, to protect him against death threats and vandalism of his property. So it's pretty intense,
you know,
considering he thought he was doing something legal.
I have so many mixed feelings about this topic. You know, first of all, you know, I consider myself to be an animal lover. I don't eat most animals. I really love animals, and I love nature. I like to I want nature to be preserved. But I also understand. I mean, and I had the same emotional reaction I think most people have when you see one of these hunting pictures of like this beautiful animal who was just slaughtered for really doesn't seem like any apparent practical reason. Or, you know, I've seen pictures of people with their dead giraffe. I'm like, oh God, that's I have a visceral reaction. It's very negative feelings. And so I understand where everybody's coming from. But I also
I can't
understand
figure out the trophy on the wall thing with like you've got like the eyes of a dead animal staring at you in the room. I can't figure out why people are comfortable in a room like that.
To each their own, right? It's not my thing, but you know, some people enjoy that. The thing that I pay attention to is, well, you know, how does this impact the that community and that natural environment? And the reality is this type of hunting can actually puts a value on preserving these species. It gives that community a reason not to kill every lion, because the lions are a threat. Okay, lions are dangerous. They kill your livestock, your children. Like if these lions had no commercial value to out of town hunters, they might all be dead, right? So, you know, these hunters come in, you know, rich guys. I understand that dentist dropped $55,000 in a poor African village. Okay. Yeah. Imagine what that does to a poor village. Okay. Or, you know, to anywhere. So in the long run,
like a broken window fallacy though.
Well, you know, in this case, though, it is kind of counterintuitive when you think about it. But hunting, can actually preserve an environment, because what we really have is a lack of private property protection. Okay, if we had private property protection, and you can say, look, hey, you guys love Cecil's brother Bill or whatever, and you want to keep him alive. Okay, you can purchase him, or you can purchase his habitat, or you can purchase this preserve and keep him alive, and you can purchase a fence to make sure he doesn't go kill somebody else.
I think that the Cecil lion was actually on protected land, and they lured it off of the land that was protected.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know there's details about the story, but it certainly wasn't the dentist who was committing any crime, if a crime took place. It was the guide that he hired, right? But the one who got crucified was the dentist. He can't practice his business for, you know, I think he's got a fair bit of money to live off right now. But that's the question, is this reasonable? Like, should this happen to somebody who doesn't even realize they're breaking a law? They're doing something that the public didn't like, but it's not like they warned him first.
Right.
Don't go this, hunting or we'll destroy your life.
It's a very unsavory mob justice mentality. It doesn't really sit well with me. But yet at the same time, I kind of like the idea, you know, if he had really done something horrible, you know, letting his neighbors know about it is not the worst thing. But it just seems very blunt and inaccurate and has the potential to be, you know, just life destroying in cases, you know, where it may be misapplied. One of the other examples you sent to me was a man that was somebody thought he was taking a picture of their child. Do you remember this story?
Oh, this is terrible. And it's actually just come out in the news, but it happened about 2 years ago, and this is in Canada, in Hamilton, Ontario. Yeah, it's horrendous.
Tell us what happened there.
So this guy, he was 51. He was riding his bike, and he stopped to text his son on his cell phone. And while he was stationary, this young girl came up. A lot of the details haven't been fully released, but this is what I surmised from it. This girl came up to him, and she started talking to him, and he got playful and pretended to take her picture. Now, on his phone, the camera was actually broken. He wasn't taking pictures at all. But the mother of the girl accused him of being a creep, basically, and potentially a pedophile. She created a huge scene. A mob started to gather. And so this guy took off on his bike, and somebody else jumped into a black truck, chased him around the city for 20 minutes. This guy managed to elude them, the truck driver, until they cornered him in the back of a building and hit and run, basically just rammed
executed
into him on his bike.
Executed
his head injuries. Yeah, executed him. His head injuries. He was instantly hospitalized in a coma, and he lived for 81 days. And when he died, the homicide investigators took over and managed to locate the truck to impound it and so on. But 2 years later, they still haven't charged anybody.
Really?
They know. Yeah. The truck, it was kind of like a weirdness factor with the truck where it was owned by one person, but it had just been sold to somebody else. And eight people apparently had access to the truck who could have driven it. And no one's talking. But yeah, they just decided this all went down in half an hour. A man lost his life because they got in their head that he was a pedophile taking in camera on it.
That's awful, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's the ugly side of vigilante justice.
Yeah. I mean, even the word, I mean, when we say vigilante justice, we, you know, it definitely has this, you know, negative context to it. But, you know, that's not necessarily always the case when we talk about like a private defense or even a private justice system. I mean, look how many other places we actually have, I would say, dispute resolution. Okay, and maybe not easily for things as serious as like this accused child photographer, but you know, our lives are full of potential conflicts and that are easily resolved, whether it's through merchant services, through our credit cards, or through other private dispute resolutions or rating systems on Amazon for vendors or eBay. I mean, our lives are full of these private dispute resolution systems. So, I mean, it's not like these things are unheard of. We just need to you know, find additional ways, I think, to expand them and look at ways that people could have the justice they need for something serious, but, you know, something that actually works, not the government system, which is you know, completely awful and rarely brings justice to anybody.
Well, it's so often about money and words, you know. It's not about justice. It's about who uses words most cleverly in the current justice system. But I think there's some really important core elements to the justice system as it was designed. The main ones are that people deserve to be considered innocent until proven guilty. And that means simply that, like, I used to work in the film industry, and a lot of stuff is controlled through back channel telephone lines, phone calls going around talking trash about people. And every time I got one of those phone calls, the first thing I said is, well, what did that person say about it? If they were talking trash about somebody, well, what was their version of the story? And inevitably it was met with, well, I don't know, I didn't talk to them. And it was like, well, that's what you need to do, right? I'm not going to engage in this conversation until we have both sides of the story.
Right. It's just gossip then.
Yeah. But people get worked up about it, and then they think they know something about somebody without the person having the chance to say it. I've actually, had a friend who found out almost 20 years after high school that he had been accused of raping somebody. He never knew about it. And he was like, that's why everyone started treating me differently.
Oh, how horrible.
Yeah. And, you know, but that kind of stuff goes on all the time in natural justice, in society,
right,
the way people manipulate. And that's one of the things that I do value about the justice system, is their dedication to being considered innocent before, you know, until you're proven.
Well, right, at least on paper, that principle is there.
Yeah, and being unfortunately given the right to a free trial. Or a fair trial.
That's the way they sell it. Unfortunately, the reality is far, far from that.
Yeah, and that's why nobody's happy. But those core principles and whatever comes into play in the future, I think those two main principles, the right to a fair trial and to be presumed innocent until the case against you is proven.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
But what were we on about? Oh, yeah, the right to a fair trial. And there's two sides to every argument, right? When you have a social wrong that's been done, you've got the person who has the right to the fair trial, and you've got the victim who needs to feel the sense of balance back in their life again,
right,
to avoid those feudal blood wars, the Hatfields and McCoys.
Right. Yeah, I think of there is a desperate need to put the victim's interests into the system. And I feel like the state has taken over so much of this justice system to serve their interests. It's like, well, we're gonna find this, you know, somebody broke a law, well, we're gonna find them. So they get the money. Well, what about the victim? Okay, well, there's, you know, I think that any justice system that I would like to see, you know, starts with trying to make the victim as close to whole as possible. Whether it's from a theft, it means returning property. Sometimes, you know, if it's violence, it's going to be a lot harder to make that up to them, but it still should be the focus. And maybe the criminal has to spend the rest of their life working off a debt towards that they could never meet, but maybe that should be part of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the questions. I don't know if it would ever be answered, how to work out the difference of opinion and what is restitution, where some people, you know, they want, you know, blood for blood, an eye for an
right.
eye, and, you know, and other
vengeance.
People feel that it's more psychological, that it has to do with the person who committed the crime is psychologically not well. I kind of come from that perspective. I think if somebody, you know, I think the rules are pretty simple to follow in a society. I mean, not necessarily in this one. We've got, like, you know, I don't even know what all the rules are. There's so many, it's ridiculous. And you just stop caring. But in a basic society, the rules are so simple that if somebody can't follow them, there's something mentally wrong with them. That's my perspective. Right?
Right.
And, but, you know, you're never going to convince people one way or the other. Some people say, I know what evil looks like, and they'll show you a picture of a convicted serial killer. And they believe that in that person's eyes, when they look at that person's face, they are seeing, literally seeing evil. Right. So, and that's, I think that's true in society on so many different issues, that one of the problems is people think when they're talking and problem solving and presenting ideas that they're talking to other people who think just like them.
Right.
And it's right. So not true.
Right. Like when I see the face of like Nancy Pelosi or Lindsey Graham or one of these people, I'm picturing, okay, that's what evil looks like. other people want to vote for them. So, yeah, there is a big difference there. But, you know, I think that need for vengeance is very emotional, and it's very, you know, it's very deep in our brains. I mean, let's face it, if somebody hurt one of my girls or someone in anyone in my family, yeah, I'm going to want blood. That's an emotional need. I'm not going to explain it rationally. I'm just feeling it.
Especially with children.
Yeah.
Even if it's not your own children.
Right.
But especially if it's your own, that's where you actually find the most vigilante justice resulting in death, is in terms of pedophiles.
Right. And I think we're just hardwired to feel the need to protect children that way. You know, that's probably just something we've evolved to. You know, wiring, you know, it's like, oh, there's a threat to the, you know, of course it's exploited continuously, but it's for the children, right? Where do you think that came from? It's for the children. Oh, okay.
For the children.
All right. Raise my taxes again, and I'm going to act like I like it because it's for the children. Oh.
Yeah, I agree. I actually do think that it's like, it's just something inside of you. Like if you see a child who's about to be hit by a car, you're not even thinking like, if I save them, am I going to get hit by the car? That doesn't really enter your mind. You just have an impulse to rescue them. So, and that's where you see the most, actually one of the stories I came across, I didn't give you a link to this one because it's just so wrapped up and I guess mired in complicated issues, but here it is anyways. There's a guy in Ireland who's a very well-known pedophile, And he is now released from jail, and he's constantly under threat of death from vigilante justice. And he got beat up. They recorded it, put the footage online. It was terrible, even though a lot of people, I'm sure, believe that he deserves every bit of it. And he tried to leave Ireland to go to the UK, but the vigilante, you know, crowd is tracking him, and they posted footage and tracked his journey on the ferry over to the UK. So the cops in the UK went and said, okay, you might as well go back to Ireland. Everybody knows you're here. You're not safe, right? So, you know, but that's one of the, you know, it's kind of an interesting scenario, because I don't think many people would feel sorry for the guy, you know? Most people want him dead.
And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
For some reason in this country, in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
We are back. Trigger warning, especially after the last segment. This is the Freedom Fiends. Let's lighten things up a little bit, and let's meet the Batman of Tunbridge, Wells. There's this vigilante story on the fun side of a guy going around in what's essentially a Batman costume, lecturing people on their bad driving.
I couldn't believe this. I couldn't believe that. We'll put the link to this in the show notes somewhere on the podcast, because you have to see the image of this to really believe it. The guy looks like Batman on this bizarre electric unicycle. It's quite a sight to see. Get one.
I'm gonna start looking for one. If anyone knows where I can get one of these things in Canada, let me know. You know, message
air wheels.
On, I think it's on called YouTube.
Anything.
You know, I gotta get one of these things.
Just Google it. I'll bet you they're for sale on Amazon by now. So you know.
So this guy, he's like scooting around the UK, catching people jumping, you know, red lights, you know, expecting the green but going too soon, not signaling properly. You know, he's going after people on bicycles, not signaling properly. You know, you name it. You're bad in traffic. You're annoying people. Batman's going to get you on his little electric unicycle.
And he's like, I guess he's like chastising people that are like talking on cell phones while driving, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is a bad habit, that. But, well, the problem with driving is it only takes a few seconds of not paying attention and disaster can strike. So I think it's a pretty serious thing when you're driving to take it.
Don't you think a creepy Batman on an electric unicycle might also distract drivers?
I'm just like imagining, you know, sitting there and all of a sudden having Batman, you know, scoot up to your driver's window and yell at you. I'd jump like 10 feet out of my seat.
If you were just driving along and you see him going the other way, you might like, what the heck was that? You know, next thing you know, you're in an accident. So I'm not sure if this guy really has the right approach, but I guess he means well.
Nifty wheels. I got to give him that. I lived in this small town. We had a place, an intersection we called the Five Corners, and it was really bizarre where five streets all met up, and there was like some one-way stuff going on in certain parts of the Five Corners. And so somebody had put a suggestion in the editorial or, you know, letters to the editor in the local newspaper that you should go around and just shoot these like little rubber darts or whatever to stick to the cars that drive poorly. So if a car gets home and, you know, it's driving around, it's got a bunch of darts stuck to it, you know that they're a crap driver, right? Which was funny. And he goes, except for the Five Corners. You're not allowed to shoot a dart at someone's car on the Five Corners because nobody gets that right.
I saw some aerial photo of an intersection that I think was in the UK somewhere, but it was five big roads coming together, and it had a central roundabout in the middle, and then it had like five other little roundabouts going around the roundabout.
I've heard that those are actually crop circles.
But without government,
aliens
who would build?
Keep coming
who
up would, on this show.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. So we don't need it. We don't need the government to build these kind of ridiculous roads because it's aliens. So.
I know, but
there you go.
Cyclists in traffic, you know, I find them annoying because they act like a car when it suits their purpose, and then all of a sudden they'll just cross, like, you know,
if
they're
a pedestrian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not helpful. People
well,
on bicycles.
Where I am right now, I'm in Mount Desert Island, Maine. Okay, and this is sort of a special place because years ago, after the car was invented on this island, they resisted allowing cars here for a number of years. They fought to keep cars off the island. And eventually they couldn't keep them off. So Rockefeller and his rich buddies got together and said, well, okay, you're going to have cars. That's fine. But we're going to build our own private road system here just for horses, okay, and carriages.
Okay.
And there's like, I think it's over 100 miles of these roads all over the island. And he employed over 300 people to maintain them. And these roads, these privately made roads, are gorgeous. Just rock solid, perfectly engineered, gorgeous stone arches over the creeks and just beautiful. Okay, now the primary use is for bicyclists. Okay, you can ride your bike over these roads. It's just gorgeous. It's a paradise for bikers, but yet the bikers are still all over the roads. They have these incredible biking opportunities here, and they're still just swarming everywhere in the street. So, yeah.
And they get this attitude too, like, you know, it's like smug instead of smog. That was a South Park episode, actually. Those people with their economically, you know, like their environmentally sound vehicles and stuff. Oh no, the whole city is being, you know, overcome with smug.
Oh yeah, that was pretty funny.
We got like Batman. I'd actually like to see a version of that on city buses, on the really crowded ones during rush hour. And, you know, there's terrible behavior that needs to be dealt with. I think that we could probably organize throwing certain people off of buses when they're not, you know, they're taking up, like, you know, far too much room with their bags. I actually chose a bag to carry to work that would not take up as much space on the bus because I care about my companion citizens.
Well, is it a government bus?
It is a government bus, but it could be privatized.
It's socialism.
You'd still find the same.
Yeah. Well,
the same
but
problem.
Let's face it: with socialism, the shortage is built in, so there's never going to be enough space on a socialist bus. Okay.
What about people who answer their cell phone on the bus, and then you have to listen to their whole conversation? It's like that's the problem with bus: is you're stuck there. You can't leave. Right.
Well, I think if you have to hear this conversation, I think you should be allowed to comment on it as well. Right.
I've actually seen that happen. It was really fun.
Start participating in the conversation with them. Right.
I know.
But
I have seen that happen on a bus. It was hysterical. The person's trying to pretend like it wasn't happening.
I think a private, you know, a true free market for transportation services might accommodate, like, you know what, you want to have room for a bunch of big bags, or you want to do your man spreading or whatever they call it.
So ridiculous.
Here's the deluxe accommodations that cost $5. Oh, you want to stand and just hold the rail? That's only $2, right? Like, there's a market solution for all of these problems.
Yeah. People who complain about man spreading have never been, at a punk concert where you go out on the mosh pit floor. You learn how to fend for your own. You can, you know, find ways to, you know, defend your space if you need to.
Have you had to do that a lot?
I've been in a couple of mosh pits, actually. Mm. With some really great boots.
Not my idea of a good time, I don't think.
No, it can be great if you're with a good crowd. But it's really funny when people decide they can go up on a stage and then jump, and you're all supposed to just, you know, support them so they can.
And you just
flip and
move out of the way and you watch them crack their head open. Is that?
Yeah, they didn't negotiate properly.
Is there a social contract of moshing that is, you know, acceptable? Like you should catch them. You don't have to. Or
I think you get up on the stage and you kind of look around and you get nods of agreement from people before you jump.
Okay, there's an element of consent. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about consent. But right. Thinking about pet peeves, there's a guy, a vigilante guy, also in the UK. I love these people. He was going around wearing a camouflage netting, not just a camouflage army suit, actual camouflage netting, hiding in the bushes to catch dog owners who aren't picking up their dog's poop.
I love that. I hate those people. Oh, yeah. And I think that's a very creative approach, right? Like, if there needs to be an angry mob that like chases somebody out of Ireland.
He calls himself the Turdinator.
The Turdinator. Oh, I love that. You know,
only in England.
Well, we could really use that around here. In fact, it's not a big problem here, but just today, okay, we're doing this beautiful nature hike, and we connect to this one trail, which is sort of unusually flat and accessible to a parking lot. But it's this gorgeous natural environment. People come to this part of Maine to just be in nature and appreciate this incredible natural beauty. And somebody said, you know what? Oh, here I am in this beautiful environment. Let me just leave this bag of dog crap here on the side of the trail.
A bag of it. So he was trying to be good, and then he just gave up?
Like he had taken the trouble to bag it, but then just left it right on the side of the road. Like, you know, you came so, like, you could have flung it into the woods.
He's
like
a halfway crook. There ain't no such thing as halfway crooks.
But the trails at home, I see this all the time. People just let their dogs run rampant, and they're not even with them when they go, so they don't even necessarily know. But it can be quite unpleasant and really just ruins the trail. But, you know, like I said, I'm an animal lover. I love the dogs. It's these owners that just really, really get to me.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that some people are really responsible and pick up the poop in those little blue bags. They're usually blue. But when I'm like walking to the SkyTrain and stuff, and I'm passing somebody walking their dog, I'm just like, that's poop in your hand. You know, like, I don't actually want to pass them because I know that I'm passing somebody who's holding a bag of poop in their hand.
Oh, it's
gross.
Horrible. I dated a girl that had this big dog. It was a big dog. And, you know, we do stupid stuff for love, right? You know, it's somehow, I don't know how I ended up, you know, having to take the dog for a walk in the city. And like, you know, and it's warm. You can use that baggie.
I know.
You gotta pick it up. Like,
yeah.
I think I only did that one time. I'm like, no.
It's
no.
Not my dog. Catch this out. The Turdinator, he says, if I have to go to court to explain my actions, if it's saving a child from getting dog mess in their eye and going blind through disease, so be it.
Yes!
That is epic.
That is.
Saving a child from getting dog mess in their eye. It's all about the children. It's innate. We want to save children.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, where we're saving children from getting statism in their eye and going blind through disease.
So be it.
Yes. I'm James Babb, and I'm here with Diana Davison. This is our final segment of the Freedom Fiends.
I know. We've laughed. We've cried.
We've saved children.
So much. Saving all the children. That's what the Freedom Fiends is about. It's for the children.
It's always for the children.
Well, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of important issues with, vigilante justice, with the currently existing justice system that's relevant to anarchy, because I think that's something that people need to be assured of, that anarchy doesn't mean chaos, that they can live in an anarchist society and still be safe.
Right, and you're never going to be 100% safe. There's always going to be, a handful of, crazy, violent people. The question is, how do we handle these? Do we give them badges and let them commit their violence with impunity? Or
nobody
do we set up a system?
Nobody likes the hall monitor.
Yeah. So, I think you're right. They're really, we do need to communicate that, but of course we're not central planners, so we can't tell people exactly how it's going to be. But let's, take a look at what we have here. It's not that great, okay? What are estimates? The governments have killed like 500 million of their own people, their own subjects over the past century. The children are getting harmed daily in these indoctrination camps, child protective services.
Public faith in the justice system is at a rock bottom low.
Yeah.
I don't think most people actually feel that the courts actually serve justice anymore.
They don't. They don't. And a lot of people are figuring it out. But they want to know what the alternative is. Can there be market solutions? Can there be voluntary solutions? And I know there can be, because we're already living them in so many other ways, right? I mean, look at how many disputes, how much disputes are handled privately or just prevented through private contracts and security. Private security certainly is going to be superior to any kind of government monopoly security. So it is our duty to remind people that there's such potential to have this be so much better.
You got to think outside the box, And boxes
outside the cage.
To get out of.
Think outside the cage.
Ask a child, right? This is a Reggie Watts line, but Ask a child. Sometimes boxes aren't that easy to get out of.
Especially if it's one of those containment boxes that they have in some government schools now. They literally have boxes where they're padded on the inside to shove kids into. But I guess, while they're waiting for the Ritalin to kick in.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, there's an alternative to that. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Society, nobody was really all that pleased with the way it turned out.
An interesting social experiment. We're not really sure.
That's the weird thing, is all of our social systems are an experiment, and we are being experimented on, which is supposed to be ethically wrong. You know, you're not supposed to experiment on humans.
You're not? You're not supposed to randomly give, segments of the population syphilis just to see what happens, or dump chemicals on towns.
Dog poop in their eyes, you know? Like.
Just to see which kids go blind.
Thank goodness there's the Turtonator and Batman on a unicycle, too.
It gives me hope for the future. It really does. Knowing that the Turtonator and Unicycle Batman...
Do they have jobs?
Standing, I assume. We can assume that Batman is independently is a billionaire, right? So we know he's got it covered. The Turtonator, I don't know. How does he monetize his service? Could we hire him?
There's like awesome photos of him with like actual camouflage netting covering his body like a human bush.
I want to hire him. I want to hire the Turtonator.
Oh man, so much good stuff in the news. But I think safety, though, that is definitely an issue. That, I mean, nobody's ever truly safe, like you said, but they need the impression that they're not going to be, you know, attacked by Bin Laden if you fire Obama and decide not to participate in the local elections.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. But it's been a great show with you.
I know, really, it was our first time doing a show together. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
And you're like Mr. Mobile, right? Like, you're broadcasting.